We pick up in our study of the book of Revelation, and we're going to review some of the verses we've been working on. And one of those, of course, is Revelation chapter 1, verse 19, which we've mentioned can serve kind of as an outline for the book. Let's try to say this together. Write the things which you have seen, and the things which are, and the things which will take place after this. And then chapter 5, verse 12, we have a little bit of a list here. Let's try to say this together. Worthy is the Lamb who was slain to receive power and wisdom and riches and strength and honor and glory and blessing. And it's power and riches and wisdom. Strength, honor, glory, and blessing. Okay, so then we're going to add this one, Revelation 6:10. We'll work on this one because this one can be considered the key question of the book. The key question of the book, and let's just read it together and then work on memorizing it. And they cried with a loud voice, saying, "How long, O Lord, holy and true, until you judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth?" And we see, of course, that this is a cry coming from under the altar of those martyrs who were slain. So, chapter 1, verse 19, chapter 5, verse 12, and 6:10. We're trying to add slowly but surely one point for as many chapters as we can, as long as we're in the book of Revelation. So we're going to review these eight keys, and then we're going to move on to more discussion about the fifth key that we've been discussing. So point number one, key number one to help us unlock the book is that the book of Revelation is a symbolic book. Unfortunately, as we've mentioned, so many miss that vital, important key. And if you start off on the wrong note thinking that, hey, this is primarily about things that are literal, then it goes awry very quickly. Notice also point number two. Primarily, the book of Revelation is about things which must shortly take place, and it's shortly to take place from the perspective of those who first received the book, from the perspective of the first century Christians. Point number three, written to be understood, and so if we come to Revelation and there is something for me to understand, and so that while it was written specifically to the first century Christians, just as every other book of the New Testament was, then, you know, and for the benefit of the Christians to enable them to teach their unbelieving friends, family, and even enemies. But the New Testament, including Revelation, was written to be understood, not to confuse us. Point number four, it's written clearly to comfort persecuted Christians of the first century. That brings us then to the fifth key, is that the book of Revelation identifies the period of the 42 months, which we'll plan to continue to talk about in chapters 11 through 13. Then point number six. The sixth key is that the book of Revelation identifies the dragon and the two beasts. And you're going to see how clearly keys number four, five, and six go together, because the dragon and the two beasts are heavily involved and responsible for the persecution that comes upon first century Christians. Point number seven builds upon point number six. The prostitute named Babylon, which we're going to see, this prostitute named Babylon is going to be riding on the back of that first beast discussed that we'll plan to discuss in point number six. And then the eighth key. Clearly, the book of Revelation is not focused on a physical kingdom. The book of Revelation is focused on a spiritual kingdom. So it identifies a spiritual rather than a physical kingdom. So now let's pick back up with the fifth key. This period of the 42 months that we find in chapters 11 through 13, again, three different phrases, not just the 42 months, but when you take 42 months and you multiply that by days to get the days, 42 times 30 is 1,260, and so you find that phrase as well. But you also find a time and times and half a time. And again, remember, a time is one and times is two, and we're not thinking multiplication here, it's addition. So a time is one plus times is 2 plus 1 half, half a time, you have 3.5. 3.5 years is the same as 42 months or 1,260 days. We've looked at the 42 months in chapter 11, verse 2, which the 42 months, what's being trampled? The holy city. The holy city is trampled underfoot for 42 months, a clear reference to the church. And then notice also chapter 13, verse 5. Revelation chapter 13, verse 5, you have, he was given a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and he was given authority to continue for 42 months. So what we have then is we have the first beast that is given this authority for 42 months. And what is he doing during this 42-month period? Speaking great things and blasphemies. But we also see, as you continue, verse 7, it was granted to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And so you have this concept of persecution. Now, we'll notice that it's going to be a shorter period in contrast to later, the 1,000 years and other periods of time you might see. But it's going to be a very intense period. Short but intense period of persecution. The holy city, which we've looked at, not only chapter 11, verse 2, but we see later on in chapter 21, verse 2 and 22:19, you find that this holy city, which is reference to the church, is going to come out of this great tribulation and is going to look as though she has never been, appear as though she's never been harmed. And she is going to look like a beautiful bride, prepared, adorned for her husband. And notice, this holy city is going to be the same as what Jesus says in chapter 3, verse 12, the city of my God. And then notice the 1,260 days. So whereas in chapter 11, verse 2, you have the 42 months, notice the very next statement, verse 3, Revelation 11, verse 3, and I will give power to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy 1,260 days clothed in sackcloth. So for the same period of time that the holy city is tread underfoot, trampled upon for 42 months, so these witnesses will testify. But now instead of given the same time, exact phraseology of 42 months, we're now given 1,260 days. And so that's why we just make sure that we equate this period, it's the same time frame. Notice also chapter 12, verse 6, for the 1,260 days. Chapter 12, verse 6, then the woman fled into the wilderness, where she has a place prepared by God that they should feed her there 1,260 days. So what you have then is that God is taking care of his people for this period of intense persecution. And then notice chapter 12, verse 14, a time and times and half a time. But the woman was given two wings and a great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness to her place where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time from the presence of the serpent. So with that connection then, with chapter 12, verse 6, once we know very clearly that not only these are the same periods of time, but notice that God is making preparations for her, place prepared by God that they should feed her. So God's taking care of her nourishment. And then when we look at chapter 12, verse 14, the same chapter, you have that God provides a place or the ability to get to a place where she is nourished, she is fed, she is taken care of. So the same kind of analogy. So when we have not only the times match up, but then these same concepts, we know that these are interchangeable terms. 42 months, 1,260 days, time and half times, 3.5 years. And so we just map that out once again so that we know that that is the same time frame. All equivalents, phraseology, very similar as well. But notice the real background for this we find back in the book of Daniel. Turn with me, if you will, to Daniel chapter 7. Daniel chapter 7, of course, may be pretty well known as the chapter of the Ancient of Days. But notice what we also have in Daniel chapter 7. Notice verse 25. Daniel 7, verse 25. And let's back up to verse 23. After this mention in verse 22 of the Ancient of Days, his arrival, of course, the Ancient of Days is going to be a clear reference to Jesus and God. It may be more comprehensive. But what you have is verse 23. Thus he said, the fourth beast. Now notice once again, as we just recall very quickly, Daniel's beasts. The first beast was a reference to the Babylonian Empire. The second beast, the Medo-Persian Empire. The third beast, the kingdom of Greece. And then the fourth beast is unnamed. Of course, has not shown up on the scene yet. And we're going to see that this parallelism, we're going to be talking about obviously what the first beast is, and we're going to see the fourth beast of Daniel is going to be this beast upon which this harlot, this prostitute is going to be riding, the kingdom of Rome. So the fourth beast shall be a fourth kingdom on earth, which shall be different from all other kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, trample it and break it in pieces. Verse 24. Then notice this, the ten horns are ten kings who shall arise from this kingdom. And we're going to see so many parallels in this service background for what we're studying in Revelation. The ten horns are ten kings who shall arise from this kingdom, and another shall arise after them. He shall be different from the first ones and shall subdue three kings. Verse 25, he shall speak pompous words against the Most High, shall persecute the saints of the Most High, and shall intend to change times and laws. Then the saints shall be given into his hand. Notice, here it is, for a time and times and half a time. Notice also chapter 12, verse 7. Chapter 12, verse 7. Then I heard the man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand to heaven, and swore by him who lives forever and ever that it shall be for a time, times, and half a time. And when the power of the holy people has been completely shattered, all these things shall be finished. So notice that. The power of these people is completely shattered. That's the same concept of the holy city being trampled underfoot for 42 months, being persecuted for this period of 3.5 years, a time, times, and half a time. And so we can make clear connection with John's use, given to him by God, of Daniel's prophecy. So the saints, the holy people, is clearly equal to the holy city. So Daniel and John, we're talking about the same scenario, and Daniel prophesied concerning these things. Notice then, it is clearly a reference to a relatively short period of intense persecution, as we said, short in contrast to the 1,000 years. We cannot understand this literally, although some may attempt to do so. Notice that then brings us to the sixth key. The sixth key is that the book of Revelation identifies the dragon and the two beasts. So the dragon. Notice chapter 12, verse 3, reading from Mounce's translation. A huge red dragon that had 7 heads and 10 horns, and on its heads were 7 crowns. Now, as you pick up this terminology, notice what we already saw in Daniel and the similarity, the 7 heads, the 10 horns. Its heads were 7 crowns, and of course, you have the kings. You have the emperors. Chapter 12, verse 4, reading from the New American Standard. And the dragon stood before the woman who was about to give birth, so that when she gave birth, he might devour her child. And so what is the dragon trying to do? He is trying to consume and to destroy God's purposes and God's people. Now, you'll hear a lot of discussion about what the woman represents. I believe that the woman actually is a representation of faithful Israel. So, if indeed, which I think that if you look into this, the best imagery and based upon the background, the woman is going to be faithful Israel, the male child here would be Christ. Now, of course, is it Christ and comprehensive of faithful Israel giving birth to faithful Israel? Possibly. But most seem to believe that the male child is clearly a reference to Christ. And we see that that's certainly what the devil was trying to do, was trying to snuff out Christ as he came into the world with, of course, the use of Herod, and that was completely unsuccessful. Notice then, you have the dragon. The dragon. Well, we've talked about working crossword puzzles. If you like working crossword puzzles, what do? You plug in what you do know to help you find out, figure out what you don't know to solve this puzzle. Well, we can do that with this concept of the dragon. Chapter 12, verse 9. Notice, reading from the New American Standard, "And the great dragon was thrown down, the serpent of old, who is called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was thrown down to the earth, and his angels were thrown down with him." So, very clearly we can plug into this crossword puzzle, if you will, that the devil is the dragon. That's a given. And we have background, of course, on this concept of the serpent of old, the serpent's tempting of Adam and Eve, Genesis chapter 3. And we see in Revelation he is still engaged in his deceptive work. Chapter 20, verse 2, notice, "And he laid hold of the dragon," of course, this being that angel that lays hold of the dragon, the serpent of old, "who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. And so we're going to have the binding of Satan. Notice also, we're going to have identification of the two beasts. Well, the first beast, in chapter 13, verses 1 through 10, we're going to see again in chapter 17, verse 3. Now notice, as we put this together, it's important that we notice what we're given, because I believe you're going to find that in chapter 13 and chapter 17, we're going to have the same beast. When we read this description in chapter 13 and we compare that with what we have, notice, just to make it shorter, chapter 17, verse 3, you have chapter 17, verse 3, this scarlet beast. "He carried me away in the spirit into the desert wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, which was full of names of blasphemy, having 7 heads and 10 horns. Same kind of description, only we're given that this is a scarlet beast. But now scarlet, notice, you have concerning the devil, the dragon, notice chapter 12. You have in chapter 12 that this similarity of what the dragon looks like and what the first beast looks like, you have in verse 3 of chapter 12, "With this dragon, what color is this dragon?" Some of your translations will say something to the effect of fiery red, a red dragon. Well, when you have the beast scarlet and you have all the imagery of the heads and the horns, the beast looks enough like the dragon that you know very clearly this connection. And it's obvious that the first beast is working for the dragon, the devil. And so in chapter 17, verse 3, the scarlet beast, while in chapter 13, you're not given this terminology of scarlet, yet you know that this is going to be the same beast. And you're just given a little bit more detail with that terminology of scarlet. Notice chapter 13, verse 1, this beast rises up, notice, out of the sea. So you have the first beast, the sea beast, we might call it, rising up out of the sea. The second beast, the earth beast, rising up out of the earth. So the sea beast and the earth beast, we might also refer to these as the first and second beast. But if we say the first beast, it's the sea beast. We say the second beast, it's the earth beast. Scarlet, We talked about scarlet, that concept of red. Some of your translations may render it as bright red. Interesting terminology with that and what you find in chapter 12, verse 3, of the dragon being fiery red. Notice also the seven heads and ten horns, chapter 13, verse 1. The sea beast has seven heads, ten horns, on his horns, ten crowns. And then also chapter 17, verse 3. Chapter 17, verse 3, you have this terminology of seven heads and ten horns. Verse 7 of chapter 17. The angel said to me, "Why did you marvel? I will tell you." Of course, he's marveling at the woman. And we're going to see a depiction of how she may have looked based on this description later on. But he's awestruck. He's just, you know, baffling. Not that he's necessarily attracted. He might be completely appalled, but it's just, you know, stunning. And so he's asked, "Why did you marvel?" And notice then, John is also told, "I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has the seven heads and the ten horns." And then looking at chapter 13, verse 2, this beast has a body like a leopard, feet like a bear, and a mouth like a lion. Isn't that interesting? Because this is going to remind us of what we have in Daniel, the description we have in Daniel, where the fourth beast is going to be a combination of the previous three beasts. And it's going to be unnamed, and yet we're going to see this unveiling, this revealing, this disclosure that Daniel's fourth beast is going to be this first beast, this sea beast, that rises up in chapter 13 of Revelation. Chapter 13, verse 2, "The dragon gave him his power and his throne and his great authority." So, like Daniel's fourth beast, a fourth kingdom. And we've looked at chapter 7, but let's notice Daniel 7, verse 7, and then we'll go ahead and recall verses 23 through 25. Daniel 7, verse 7, Daniel says, "After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible, exceedingly strong. It had huge iron teeth. It was devouring, breaking in pieces, and trampling the residue with its feet." So notice this concept of trampling. The holy city is trampled underfoot. We see with all this imagery, it's clear that this beast is going to be involved in this trampling of God's people, the church. And notice the rest of Daniel 7, verse 7, "It was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had ten horns." And then notice verses 23 through 25 once again. We're told, verse 23, "It will trample and break the other kingdoms, the whole earth, in pieces." And then you have the reference to the ten horns being the ten kings, and then the persecution of Daniel chapter 7, verse 25. We're going to stop here. We'll pick back up. We're going to talk then more about the first beast and the second beast, but we're going to see that the connection is going to be that the dragon, the first beast, second beast, heavily involved in this persecution, and how Rome and the Roman Empire matches the description not only in Revelation, but the background that's given to us in the book of Daniel. And this is so important because so many people miss this, and then they make this out to be pretty much whatever they want it to be. But notice, there's an old statement when we come to try to understand what the Bible is, you know, what God has revealed in Scripture. A text can never mean what a text never meant. And so if this never meant anything about Russia or other kingdoms, it's not going to mean that now. What did it mean then at that time? What did it mean to them? And that'll help us understand the fulfillment of the prophecies. It'll help us understand that it was about things primarily shortly to take place from the perspective of those who first received the book. We'll come back to this discussion, and we'll look more then at not only who the persecutor is, but then eventually how God deals with the persecutor. And through it all, even if they kill you, put yourself in the place of a first century Christian, they kill you, you are the one who wins the victory. And so that we see one of the key concepts, key words, is this word overcome. In the same way that they overcame, as we see in chapter 12, verse 11, they, first century Christians, overcame him, that being the